Let's start. I'd like to call to order the Wellness Reimagined Committee meeting for April 20th, 2022. Crystal, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Would be honored to do so. Please rise. Do we have a picture of a flag? Oh, we do. Thanks, Desiree. Place your hand over your heart. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay. And Desiree, would you call roll in the absence of Meredith?
Of course. Nicolette Arujo. Linda Cardoza.
Present.
Jerry Chang. Meredith Chalemi. Andrea Collins. I believe I saw Andrea.
Here.
Oh. There, Andrea Collins. Maybe she stepped away.
Maybe she's done.
Susan Doback.
Here.
Sherry Geyer. Margaret Huang. Elizabeth Jimenez. Susan Langley. Carrie Keene.
Present.
Crystal Miles.
Present.
Patty Mouton.
Present.
Ann Moudry.
Present.
Joni Nichols. Phil Orland. Barbara Slope.
Present.
Amina Sen Matthews. And Dave Sullivan. And we do have quorum, Chair.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Item four on the agenda, action items, AB 361 review and make findings required by government code subsection 54953E3. Recommendation, continue virtual meetings due to the proclaimed state of emergency arising from COVID-19. Meeting in person presents imminent risks to the health and safety of attendees, and the emergency continues to directly impact the ability of the members to meet safely in person. Okay, Desiree, do we have any guests?
Are we doing the AB 361, the vote? We need a motion and a second.
Sorry about that.
No
worries. Forgot that detail. Thank you. Do I have a motion to accept?
So moved.
Okay, a second?
Second.
Okay. Do you have to call roll for that, Desiree?
I do.
Okay.
Nicolette Arujo? Linda Cardoza.
Yes, sorry.
That's okay. Thank you. Jerry Chang. Meredith Chalemi. Andrea Collins. I believe Andrea.
She might be on mute.
I'm showing her unmuted. Susan Doback?
Yes.
Sherry Geyer? Margaret Huang? Elizabeth Jimenez? Susan Langley? Carrie Keene?
Yes.
Crystal Miles?
Yes.
Patty Mouton?
Yes.
Ann Moudry?
Yes.
Joni Nichols? Phil Orlam? Barbara Slope?
Yes.
Amina Sen Matthews?
Yes.
And Dave Sullivan. And we do have majority chair.
Thank you, Desiree. Okay. And do we have any guests today? I guess that comes next.
We're opening up public comment. We do have two members of the public present. If there are attendees of the public that would like to address the committee, please use the hand raise icon or press *9 and I will unmute you.
Okay.
And I'm seeing none.
Okay. All right. Well, I see our guest speaker is here, Nasira. So I would like to introduce her. She has a very distinguished career and background. And so let me read some of her achievements here. Our guest is Nasira Cooley. And Nasira is a registered dietitian, a fitness expert, and nutrition educator. And she was drawn to nutrition and public health as a result of her diverse background in science, fine arts, and fitness. Nasira was a classical ballet dancer and trained with Pacific Northwest Ballet in Seattle and University of Arizona. And upon graduating and summa cum laude from University of Arizona with a BS in nutrition and a BFA in dance, Nasira continued her studies in pursuit of a career as a nutrition professional and obtained a master's in public health from UCLA and a doctorate in nutritional sciences from Loma Linda University. Nasira has 12 years of experience as a personal trainer and is a certified yoga instructor. She's currently an adjunct faculty member at Chapman University and private practice registered dietitian, and serves as the nutritionist for the ABT Gillespie School at Segerstrom Center for the Arts and Chapman University and AMDA College of Performing Arts. So with all that, I'm so impressed, Nasira. I'm so delighted to welcome you to our committee today.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for the introduction.
Okay.
Okay. Shall I get started? On. Wonderful. Yep. I'm going to share some slides. It looks like I'm able to do that.
Okay.
We're in business. Everyone can see. Beautiful. Now, I've presented information before to other, you know, similar groups about the brain and how foods affect the brain. And there's emerging research that I kind of want to focus on some more today. And that is actually how certain foods can impact mental health. Because I think particularly with the senior citizen population, we're very focused on preventing dementia and maintaining cognition, which of course are very important. But there's a mental health crisis that exists, and I think we often fail to consider how nutrition can help alleviate or prevent things like depression. So we'll talk a bit about that. I'm going to try to highlight, with the limited time I have, there's a lot I could cover, but I'm really going to try to just give you some concise information on what are some of the key foods you should try to include and why, given what evidence is available. And my emphasis on this is because we know that while there are certain factors that we really can't change in regards to the aging process, like our genetics and accidents we've experienced in our lifespan, there's actually a lot we can do to impact or delay or alleviate the rate of aging, so that we can age slower and more beautifully. So that's the interaction that occurs. And of course, I want to focus on the lifestyle factors that we do have some control over. So one of those is by trying to include functional foods. And this is a kind of a buzzword. We hear about it a lot. It's probably used, although incorrectly, interchangeably with the term superfoods, which isn't really that clearly defined, but usually implies these foods that have some kind of known protective benefit. So I want to highlight some of these functional foods with known impact on cognitive health and brain health. And these components, the food components, that could be a vitamin or a mineral or a phytonutrient. Is that a term we've heard before? Phytochemical, phytonutrient. So these are not vitamins or minerals, but they're these chemicals and that naturally exist in plant foods that offer some kind of protection for the plant. And what we're discovering more and more is that when humans eat foods with these phytonutrients, those phytonutrients also promote some kind of health benefit for those that eat them. And in a lot of cases, it's through antioxidant potential, which is the fighting of free radicals so that these reactive cells in our body can't attack our DNA. Okay, so we want to prevent that. And that's particularly important for brain health because in many cases, having those what we call reactive oxygen species or having a lot of oxidative stress in the body can promote the plaque formation that causes Alzheimer's disease and interrupts nerve cell function, which over time can lead to dementia. Now, what does the science say about certain foods and brain function? Because what the science says and what we read in the news or what the news likes to hype up is often vastly different. But there is a growing body of evidence around certain foods where we do see trends that are actually beneficial. So fish oil has been a pretty popular supplement on the market for over a decade. And there is some validity to the claims surrounding omega-3 fats. Particularly, we know that omega-3 fats help to support the insulation around your neurons, your brain cells, making sure that your nerve cells can communicate with one another so that your brain can communicate with other body parts, so that your brain can retrieve memories and build new memories and communicate clearly. So all of those cells that do that need that insulation, and that is often built by these healthy omega-3 fats. There's several sources of omega-3 fats, and I don't really have time to describe the differences, but the marine sources of omega-3s are more potent. That's the simplified explanation. So while these non-fish sources listed here are still sources of omega-3 fat, they're actually precursors to the more potent form of omega-3 fat, which we find direct sources of in fatty fish. And then also algae oil is another source for people that don't like fish or avoid it. And then fish oil supplements would also be a source. So what do these do for us? I mean, in addition to helping us build those membranes around brain cells, we know that these acronyms stand for DHA and EPA. These are the specific omega-3 fatty acids that are found in fish. And then polyunsaturated fatty acids. So in general, that group of fats decreases oxidative stress. And collectively, these can help reduce risk of stroke. Okay, so that's kind of a side benefit in addition to the brain health functions. And I will add to this that there's growing evidence that omega-3s, having adequate omega-3 intake, can also prevent depression. I think mental health experts are starting to realize that nutrition analysis should be one of the first lines of defense when doing mental health screening. And when we don't have enough omega-3 fat, then we don't have good nervous system function. We also might not have the right balance of hormones and neurotransmitters. And as we all know, that regulates mood and can certainly impact risk of depression. So that's another potential benefit of omega-3 fats pertaining to the brain. Next food group I'm going to cover is chocolate, which I think we'll all be pleased to know does in fact have some health benefits. You know, again, I think this is one of the foods that the media just runs wild about, you know, oh, dark chocolate's good for you. So everybody's loading up on chocolate, which if you're going to have a sweet treat, dark chocolate is a good choice. I mean, we have to keep in mind portion control and the fact that most dark chocolate's going to still have added sugars and other less healthy components, but it's definitely a good choice for a sweet treat because dark chocolate does have these flavonoids, and flavonoids are known to promote the growth of nerve cells and also may help stimulate blood flow to the brain, which we know that the more blood flow going to the brain, we're going to have more activity there, and that's going to help with memory retrieval and solidifying new memories. And I will note that, you know, typically the chocolate has to be at least 70% cacao. So that's going to be the dark chocolate, the extra dark chocolate. And side note, you know, I'm a nutritionist, so I have to add this. There are a few brands now that have no sugar added dark chocolate, like Lily's is one that I like. Trader Joe's has one called Simply Light, where they're either sweetened with stevia extract or monk fruit. So for people wanting to limit their added sugar intake or even diabetics, that's one way to sneak in your chocolate without worrying about too much added sugar. Berries are definitely considered a functional food. They have an abundance of antioxidants. You know, even just looking at this image of the berries, you can see from the picture that these are deeply pigmented. And I mentioned earlier that phytochemicals are, you know, parts of these plant foods. Well, some of these phytochemicals are actually what give these berries and other fruits and veggies their color. So the darker the pigment, typically the more antioxidant capacity of the food. So these are some of the specific flavonoid antioxidants present in berries that have benefits like, again, keeping oxidative stress down, but also have molecular pathways that we've observed where they help manage inflammation and might even help improve the communication between nerve cells. Brain plasticity, is that a term you've heard? No, not really. Maybe a few of you have. It's the ability to rewire your brain. So, you know, clearly during the developmental years, such as childhood and even through puberty and into early adulthood, the brain is more plastic, meaning we're solidifying the way that our neurons fire. Now, as we age, that process is reduced. There's less plasticity that's possible. And that's a disadvantage. If you think about all of the ways that it's actually important for us, our brains, to be able to adapt and for us to be able to learn new strategies, new ideas, and new ways to live, make lifestyle changes, we want to have better brain plasticity. So there are certain foods where there are certain pathways that we've observed through scientific research, showing that these foods may help promote brain plasticity into older adulthood. Pretty much all berries are going to have some antioxidants. Blueberries are definitely at the top of the list, definitely at the top of my list too, for my just a personal favorite. Love strawberries as well. In the US, you know, mulberries, black currants are not as popular, but again, that dark pigment indicates that they're great sources of antioxidants. Nuts and seeds definitely deserve mention. In addition to the healthy fats that exist in nuts and seeds, they're also great sources of vitamin E, and then the mineral selenium, which in addition to being an antioxidant is also necessary to make thyroid hormone. So important to make sure your selenium intake is adequate so that your thyroid status can be benefited as well. Resveratrol is a specific phytonutrient that's found in peanuts, and then of course peanut butter. And I highlight this one because this is the supposed reason that red wine is on the map as a health food, because red wine has resveratrol. So just pointing out that we can get resveratrol in other places aside from an alcoholic beverage, if that's something that you are aiming to include. And resveratrol is another antioxidant phytochemical that might have, has been shown to, at least in animal studies and in vitro studies, has been shown to protect against cancer, neurological diseases, and inflammation. Vitamin E, which is abundant in nuts and seeds, particularly sunflower seeds, almonds, and hazelnuts. Vitamin E is also an antioxidant vitamin, and it's one that helps additionally support the health of our nerve cells, and as an added bonus, is needed to maintain healthy skin. Whole grains. Okay. I think, you know, we're still in an age where there's a stigma around carbohydrate starchy foods, but whole grains are full of several beneficial components. In addition to having fiber, which we need for good digestion, reducing cholesterol, gut health, whole grains have ample B vitamins, vitamin E, and other phytochemicals that have anti-inflammatory properties and antioxidant properties. Long list of possible choices here, everything from oatmeal to whole grain pasta, quinoa, I would add to this list. Avocados, because of their abundance of monounsaturated fats, have been shown to lower the bad cholesterol, which is LDL, and may also raise your good cholesterol. So you get a compounded benefit by those two effects concurrently when we have avocados or avocado oil. And this is pertinent to brain health because research shows that high LDL is a risk factor for dementia. And then with blood pressure management, we know that high blood pressure is a risk factor for cognitive decline as well. So added benefit of the healthy fats in avocados is that it helps to reduce blood pressure. As far as alternative sources of unsaturated fats, you know, we've talked about nuts and seeds, but I'll also point out that these are in particular some of the healthy plant oils that are higher in omega-3 and omega-6 essential fatty acids, which are considered healthy unsaturated fats. And I point that out because avocados aren't always in season. So when you're unable to purchase them, if you're worried about how that's going to impact your intake of unsaturated fats, well, there's some alternatives you can switch to during those months to help fill in your gaps. Eggs, kind of a controversial one. I think we've gone back and forth regarding the benefits and risks of eating eggs. In short, eating up to 4 whole eggs per week does not affect cardiovascular disease risk factors, even for people at high risk. Now, there have been conflicting studies. Most evidence is now showing, however, that even though the egg yolk does have cholesterol, that's not directly correlated with blood lipids. What seems to be more impactful is the overall content of and quality of fats in the diet. So if your diet's high in saturated fats overall, that seems to raise LDL, triglycerides, and total cholesterol. Whereas eating an egg, because of some of its other food components, is not necessarily going to raise your bad cholesterol in your blood. So it's a little counterintuitive. We think, oh, we're eating something with cholesterol, it's going to make my blood cholesterol go up. But we're finding that it's much more complex than that. And I'm a proponent of eggs because I think in appropriate portions, it's an excellent protein source and is a great option for people who don't want to eat a lot of meat and who want a diverse, you know, something for, you know, it's a great protein source for breakfast in particular. And it's considered actually when we score foods in regards to their protein quality, egg is the gold standard that we compare all other foods to. So that gives you some perspective as well in regards to the protein in egg. And if you are concerned about too much egg yolk, my recommendation is always to, you know, try to just have 3 or 4 whole eggs a week, and then the rest of the time just have egg whites. And now that, you know, you can buy boxed egg whites, if that's something that is economical for you and makes more sense, but you know, B vitamins, which I'm going to show you guys in a minute, a chart that highlights how different B vitamins are needed to make neurotransmitters. Eggs are a great source of B vitamins, okay, which can help promote healthy brain maintenance and prevent brain shrinkage, which we can imagine is probably a shrinking brain is not a good thing for cognition. Okay, broccoli and other cruciferous vegetables, I will say, has glucosinolates, which these are converted into these isothiocyanates, and these reduce oxidative stress. So another antioxidant capability. These compounds are also used in our body's detoxification enzymes in the liver. So you want to detox your body, eat some broccoli. Keep your body supplied with these compounds from cruciferous vegetables, and that does help promote detoxification of potentially toxic compounds that we're constantly ingesting. And if we have a healthy liver, then our body can do a pretty good job of handling all that. So other cruciferous veggies are provided here if you don't love broccoli. Cooking does degrade these compounds a bit, but it doesn't eliminate them. And eating raw cruciferous vegetables does come with some side effects like gas. And then for some people, it can also interfere with the body's ability to use iodine, which is a problem for thyroid function. So I typically do recommend at least lightly cooking your cruciferous vegetables, even if it's just light steaming, because that helps make them more digestible and you still will reap the benefits of these beneficial compounds. Soy foods is another, I think, confusing nutrition topic because there's some outdated and misleading research that essentially stated that soy could cause cancer. Since we have many clarifying studies that have pointed out that that is not the case and that soy foods can actually be cancer protective and protective of cardiovascular disease. So in addition, soybeans in particular are linked with a reduced risk of dementia and improved cognition in people that are aging healthfully. So that's important. And then it's also a high quality complete plant protein. Among the plant protein sources, there are very few that are considered complete in that they have all the 9 essential amino acids that our bodies need to make the proteins in our bodies. And soy is a high quality complete protein. So again, for plant-based eaters, this is an essential part of the diet and there are additional benefits that could be acknowledged by eating soy foods. Okay, these are sources of B vitamins and folate that are associated with brain function. Do you need to supplement? Probably not, unless you have a diagnosed deficiency. And if you look at these food sources, you can see that they're pretty diverse. So if you're eating a variety of fruits and vegetables, if you're having some whole grains and some animal proteins, then most likely you're covered. Vegans are at risk of a B12 deficiency because we really only get B12 from meats, eggs, dairy, and then fortified foods. So keep that in mind if you're vegan. And then I mentioned that I was going to show you this slide where there are a variety of neurotransmitter or chemical messengers that the brain needs to properly function that are dependent on some kind of food-based component, where if we don't consume enough of it, then it's likely that we won't create enough dopamine, serotonin. So for example, like these amino acids, tryptophan and tyrosine, these are both precursors to the neurotransmitter serotonin and dopamine, which we know are neurotransmitters that promote calm, happiness, pleasurable feelings. So when we're talking about issues like depression and anxiety, if you have a deficiency in one of these amino acids, it's likely to be contributing to a dopamine deficiency or an inadequacy of serotonin. Mood, sleep, digestion, you know, our body's ability to just be able to rest and have quality sleep can impact our mental health as well. And again, we see that there are these nutrition-related precursors. Choline is another essential vitamin that's a precursor to the neurotransmitter acetylcholine, which is needed for muscle contraction and your ability to execute any sort of voluntary movement. Glutamate, again, amino acid based, needed for muscle excitation and has a role in learning and memory. And then you can see the food sources. It seems like turkey comes up quite a bit because it is a good source of protein and seems to have a lot of these critical amino acids. But I think there's something for everyone in these lists, but trying to make sure that you're incorporating foods from all of these categories would be a strong recommendation. Brain health, while it's impacted significantly by nutrition, there's other factors to consider, like getting enough sleep and keep moving, you know, exercise for enjoyment, do something that makes you happy and that you'll do regularly, because it does relieve stress from the body. It releases endorphins and that does promote calm and contentment. Stay nourished, stay hydrated, and try to avoid the quick fixes that are so easily fall into our laps, like a sugar high, a rush of caffeine, smoking, alcohol. And to sum up, I just want to point out how we can fit some of these nutritious options into our week, where, you know, sometimes we feel like, oh, we have to do this every day and it has to be perfect every day. But really, we want to look at the context of the whole week and see how we do on average. So if you're able to fit in about 6 servings per week of green leafy vegetables, which would be 1 cup raw or 1/2 a cup cooked, which really isn't that much. And, you know, there are a lot of ways to incorporate green leafy veggies, even with a breakfast, if it's in a smoothie or if it's on the side of your eggs and toast. Other veggies, 4 servings per day. So you really want to, you do want to try to get about 4 servings of veggies a day, which again is 1/2 a cup cooked or 1 cup raw. Berries a few times a week. Nuts, I would say have a serving of nuts a day, which is 1 ounce, is 1 serving. Mostly using olive oil when appropriate. I think canola oil is a good backup for the higher temperature cooking. Up to 3 ounces of whole grains per day, fish a couple times a week, including some legumes, and then lean poultry, and up to 1 glass of red wine per day if you're currently someone that consumes alcohol. If you don't consume alcohol, don't start drinking. It's not going to benefit your heart health or brain health. What questions do you all have?
Yeah, are there any questions for Nasira?
I have a question, Nasira.
I just wondered, you said avocado oil, which is more beneficial, avocado or olive oil?
They have some overlapping benefits. Avocado oil does tolerate high temperatures a little better. So in my home, I tend to use avocado oil for stir fries or as a marinade, and then I use olive oil to do salad dressings and any sort of cold prep, because there's overlap, but then they have some unique properties as well.
Do they have to be refrigerated?
No, it doesn't. I would just make sure it's stored in a glass dark bottle in a dark, cool place.
What about the big volume they have Costco, you know, plastic?
I buy those. I keep them in the dark. They do oxidize if they're exposed to light, and you want to keep it in a cool, dark place. But yeah, at least I know what you're talking about, the ones from Costco. And I know that those bottles are dark and they are large. Yeah. You can also transfer them when you buy the bulk. You could transfer it to several smaller, darker bottles if you want. I've done that before. And then I can store a couple of them in the refrigerator and keep some at room temp.
Sure, appreciate your excellent presentation. Is there any way we can have a copy of your PowerPoint?
I'd be happy to share. I think, Barbara, I can email it to you and you can distribute.
Yeah, or Desiree can add it. You can send that, can't you?
Yes, definitely. Nasira, if you'd like to send it over to me and I can distribute, it's fine.
I absolutely will. Do you mind sharing in the chat your email address?
Of course.
Thanks.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Thomas was excellent. Yours is very scientifically, verbiage. It's wonderful.
Nasira, thank you so much for the wonderful presentation. I found it very interesting and easy to follow. I liked your graphics. That it was great. There are so many different milks that are available on the shelf at the store. And for persons who are trying to avoid or trying to lessen their dairy, because of inflammation in the gut or whatever it might be, lactose intolerance, there's oat, there's almond, there's soy. And because of the good properties of soy, would soy milk be the milk that you would recommend?
That's a great question. And I generally do say that soy milk, unsweetened soy milk, is the most nutritionally equivalent to cow's milk in terms of its protein, whereas all of the other milk alternatives that exist now are very different from cow's milk. They tend to have no protein. They're significantly lower in calories. So, kind of depending on the purpose of the milk, if it's to moist, be liquid in a smoothie, then unsweetened almond milk, go for it. But if it's going to be your source of calcium and protein, unsweetened soy milk is definitely the go-to. And I will say too about cow's milk, I think, and this is another topic that can get a little controversial, but unless you have a good reason to avoid dairy, like lactose intolerance or another diagnosed condition where dairy flares up symptoms, I will say I think dairy can provide an excellent source of so many nutrients. Mm-hmm. So if you tolerate it well, then I would say sticking with fat-free cow's milk is going to provide you the most nutrition for, per calorie and per dollar. Mm-hmm. So keep that in mind. But yes, the nice thing is we do have so many alternatives now. And, making sure that whatever alternative you buy is unsweetened is important. Also, because a lot of them will have added sugars, and then, you might as well drink a soda with some milk in it, right? So that's an important quality to look for.
Thank you. And one other milk that's now, and also yogurt that's on the market, is the pea protein.
Sure.
So sure. What's your view on the pea protein as a source?
Pea protein is a decent plant protein. It's not as complete and digestible as soy. So you do end up lacking certain amino acids from relying on pea protein, but it's better than rice protein or like oat milk, I would say, in terms of its profile, nutrition profile.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Susan, did you have a question?
I did. I was wondering about hummus, which is my go-to.
Okay.
For dips, for veggie dips and things like that. Is that something you subscribe to or?
Sure. No? Sure. Hummus is great. You get a source of legumes. I think for people that don't want to eat a bean soup, that's a great way to get in some beans. And it's nice too with hummus, there's so many varieties, and I think there's more hummus available now that's made from different beans. I've seen black bean hummus, there's white bean hummus. So if you don't love the traditional hummus, think about some of those. But yes, I think hummus can be part of a great snack, especially if it's paired with vegetables or a whole grain cracker.
Yeah.
Right. Now talking about the milk, I am lactose intolerant. It's wonderful. Right. They do have lactose intolerant milk in the organic lactose intolerant. And I find the Greek yogurt is wonderful, organic. It's just, with the aging body, you need more protein. Greek yogurt has a low carb and high protein.
Absolutely true. And people with lactose intolerance do tolerate Greek yogurt pretty well because it's very low lactose naturally because of the way they produce it, the way it's strained. So even if you can't have a cup of milk, you might do fine with a serving of Greek yogurt.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anne, did you have a question?
Oh, I was just going to bring up Greek yogurt, but it came up by itself.
Oh, okay. Well, Nasira, thank you so much for your presentation today. I truly appreciate, we all appreciated it and learned a lot. And I'll be able to pass on some of that information at the OASIS Board of Directors meeting tomorrow.
Wonderful. My pleasure. Thanks for having me. And I will be sure to share the slides with Desiree, who thank you for sharing your email address.
Okay, great.
Thank you so much for the excellent presentation.
My pleasure. Yes.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay. Item number 7.
I have a question for Andrea. I noticed she's online.
Sure.
And that is, how much of what we just heard in that presentation is taken into consideration for the preparation of the Meals on Wheels meals that we distribute? She's not available.
Andrea? Oops.
All right.
For that, that's for another session, Joni.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I have no new business, or is there any other new business that anyone wants to bring up? No? Or I have no old business. Announcements of next month, I can talk about a little bit about our speaker next month, will be Natalie Basmasian. And Natalie is the homelessness coordinator for the city of Newport Beach. And it's part of the Be Well OC mental health crisis response. And Newport Beach is very fortunate in that they have a van that was donated. And so next month, Natalie will talk about that at our meeting.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, okay. At this time, members of the public may address the council regarding any items within the subject jurisdiction, provided that no action is taken on off-agenda items unless authorized by law. Comments are limited to 3 minutes unless the chair identifies a different time at the start of the meeting for all speakers. Are there any public? Did we get any, Desiree?
Chair, we did not receive any requests to speak, and we do have two members of the public present. If the members of the public would like to address the committee, please use the hand raise icon or press *9 and I will mute you. And I'm seeing none, Chair.
Okay. So if there is no further business, I'll call for adjournment. Okay. So thank you all so much for attending today. It's great seeing all your shining faces.
Thank you so much, Barbara.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Barbara.
Happy birthday, Patty.
Bye-bye.